Command School was at FleetCom, and the location of FleetCom was a closely guarded secret. The only way you ever found out where it was to be assigned there, and very few people who had been there ever came back to Earth. Just before arrival, the kids were briefed. FleetCom was in the wandering asteroid Eris, and as they approached, they realized that it really was in the asteroid. Almost nothing showed on the surface except the docking station. They boarded the shuttle bug, which reminded them of school buses, and took the 5-minute ride down to the surface. There the shuttle bug slid inside what looked like a cave. A snake-like tube reached out to the bug and enclosed it completely. They got out of the shuttle bug into near-zero gravity, and a strong air current sucked them like a vacuum cleaner up into the bowels of Eris. Bean knew at once that this place was not shaped by human hands. The tunnels were all too low, and even then the ceilings had obviously been raised after the initial construction, since the lower walls were smooth and only the top half-meter showed tool marks. The buggers made this, probably when they were mounting the second invasion. What was once their forward base was now the center of the international fleet. Bean tried to imagine the battle required to take this place. The buggers scuttering along the tunnels, the infantry coming in with low-power explosives to burn them out, flashes of light, and then cleanup, dragging the formic bodies out of the tunnels and bit by bit converting it into a human space. This is how we got our secret technologies, thought Bean. The buggers had gravity-generating machines. We learned how they worked and built our own, installing them in the battle school and wherever else they were needed. But the IF never announced the fact, because it would have frightened people to realize how advanced their technology was. What else did we learn from them? Bean noticed how even the children hunched a little to walk through the tunnels. The headroom was at least 2 meters, and not one of the kids was nearly that tall, but the proportions were all wrong for human comfort, so the roof of the tunnel seemed oppressively low, ready to collapse. It must have been even worse when we first arrived, before the roofs were raised. Ender would thrive here. He'd hate it, of course, because he was human. But he'd also use the place to help him get inside the minds of the buggers who built it. Not that you could ever really understand an alien mind. But this place gave you a decent chance to try. The boys were bunked up in 2 rooms. Petra had a smaller room to herself. It was even more bare here than battle school, and they could never escape the coldness of the stone around them. On Earth, stone had always seemed solid. But in space it seemed downright porous. There were bubble holes all through the stone, and Bean couldn't help feeling that air was leaking out all the time. Air leaking out and cold leaking in, and perhaps something else. The larvae of the buggers chewing like earthworms through the solid stone, crawling out of the bubble holes at night when the room was dark, crawling over their foreheads and reading their minds and... He woke up, breathing heavily, his hand clutching his forehead. He hardly dared to move his hand. Had something been crawling on him? His hand was empty. He wanted to go back to sleep, but it was too close to reveille for him to hope for that. He lay there thinking. The nightmare was absurd. There could not possibly be any buggers alive here. But something made him afraid. Something was bothering him, and he wasn't sure what. He thought back to a conversation with one of the technicians who serviced the simulators. Beans had malfunctioned during practice, so that suddenly the little points of light that represented his ships moving through 3-dimensional space were no longer under his control. To his surprise, they didn't just drift on in the direction of the last orders he gave. Instead, they began to swarm, to gather, and then changed color as they shifted to be under someone else's control. When the technician arrived to replace the chip that had blown, Bean asked him why the ships didn't just stop or keep drifting. "It's part of the simulation," the technician said. "What's being simulated here is not that you're the pilot or even the captain of these ships. You're the admiral. So inside each ship there's a simulated captain and a simulated pilot, and so when your contact got cut off, they acted the way the real guys would act if they lost contact. See?" That seems like a lot of trouble to go to. Look, we've had a lot of time to work on these simulators, said the technician. They're exactly like combat. Except, said Bean, the time lag. The technician looked blank for a moment. Oh, right. The time lag. Well, that just wasn't worth programming in. And then he was gone. It was that moment of blankness that was bothering Bean. These simulators were as perfect as they could make them, exactly like combat, and yet they didn't include the time lag that came from light-speed communications. The distances being simulated were large enough that most of the time there should be at least a slight delay between a command and its execution, and sometimes it should be several seconds. But no such delay was programmed in. All communications were being treated as instantaneous. And when Bean asked about it, his question was blown off by the teacher who first trained them on the simulators. It's a simulation. Plenty of time to get used to the light-speed delay when you train with the real thing. That sounded like typically stupid military thinking even at the time, but now Bean realized it was simply a lie. If they programmed in the behavior of pilots and captains when communications were cut off, they could very easily have included the time lag. The reason these ships were simulated with instantaneous response was because that was an accurate simulation of conditions they would meet in combat. Lying awake in the darkness, Bean finally made the connection. It was so obvious once he thought of it. It wasn't just gravity control they got from the buggers. It was faster than light communication. It's a big secret from people on Earth, but our ships can talk to each other instantaneously. And if the ships can, why not Fleetcom here on Eros? What was the range of communication? Was it truly instantaneous regardless of distance, or was it merely faster than light, so that at truly great distances it began to have its own time lag? His mind raced through the possibilities and the implications of those possibilities. Our patrol ships will be able to warn us of the approaching enemy fleet long before it reaches us. They've probably known for years that it was coming and how fast. That's why we've been rushed through our training like this. They've known for years when the third invasion would begin. And then another thought. If this instantaneous communication works regardless of distance, then we could even be talking to the invasion fleet we sent against the Formic home planet right after the second invasion. If our starships were going near light speed, the relative time differential would complicate communication, but as long as we're imagining miracles, that would be easy enough to solve. We'll know whether our invasion of their world succeeded or not moments afterward. Why, if the communication is really powerful, with plenty of bandwidth, Fleetcom could even watch the battle unfold, or at least watch a simulation of the battle and... A simulation of the battle. Each ship in the expeditionary force sending back its position at all times. The communications device receives that data and feeds it into a computer, and what comes out is... the simulation we've been practicing with.